Okay, so just to get us back into the flow of things, you have two sheets in front of you. You have the actual verses of this particular episode, Noach and his vineyard, as I titled it. It's only 12 verses long, describing very quickly how Noach and his sons who come out from the ark, Noach decides to plant a vineyard, gets himself drunk and exposed in his tent. Cham, Noach's son, sees Noach, tells his two brothers. The two boys, Shem and Yefes, go in and cover the nakedness of their father, Noach. Noach awakes from his wine and realizes what his small son had done to him. He then curses Canaan. Who's Canaan?
The son of Ham.
The son of Ham, right? Ham is the son who goes in and sees Noach in his nakedness. His son, Canaan, gets cursed. Blessings are given to Shem and to Yefes, and then Noach dies. Very obscure, brief, unclear, ambiguous type of story. That's what we had. The basics of the story, which we went through at length, raising all sorts of questions last week. So what I've done is I gave you your second sheet for this week, a little outline, and I tried in my mind to see how we're going to tackle this story, to break it down into three topics. So that in essence, there are three topics in the story. They will intertwine, pardoning the pun of the vineyard, throughout the story. There'll be different approaches on a pshat level, simple reading of the text. Then we'll get to the medrash, to the way that the Gemara, the sages understood it, and then to further, we'll try to break it down. But as we break it down, to help us keep in mind what it is that we're doing, I broke it down into the following three topics, which we'll go through just in terms of as a further review of what we did last week. Topic number one is Noach and his vineyard. Why is Noach planting? These are the questions we raised last week. I'm not raising any new questions. I'm just going over the questions that we had raised, in essence, last week, but just framing them in order of, in the form of these topics. Question number one, why does Noach plant a vineyard? Why is it Vayochel Noach, and he started? The first thing Noach does after coming out of this teva is he plants this vineyard. So we have to deal with this question as to why the vineyard. What is Noach's goal in planting a vineyard, that this is the first thing that he does? And we noted last week that the word the Torah uses of Vayochel has a connotation of debasing himself. It was somehow seen as a negative thing that this is the first thing that he does. Why is that? Together with the question of why does he become drunk? Was that accidental or not? Did Noach set out to get drunk, or did it happen? Because he was living in a new world. Things were different in the world post-flood as it was pre-flood. And as a result of that, the vineyard that he plants and the way that he intakes alcohol, he got drunk. That was the question we raised last week. So that's topic number one, the idea of the backdrop of this whole story. Why is he planting a vineyard and why is he getting himself drunk? Topic number two is this very ambiguous role of Canaan. Canaan is the son of Ham. Ham is one of Noah's three children. Every time Ham is introduced in the story, the Torah says, Ham, who is the father of Canaan, always introduced as the father of Canaan. What is Canaan's role in that he's always introduced as such? And of course, we noted last week that who gets cursed? Canaan gets cursed. He doesn't do anything in the story. We don't find his name in any active role in the story, and he's the one who gets the curse. And what is his curse? A slave of slaves. So that's topic number two, is understanding the role of Canaan in the story and why he gets the specific curse that he does. And topic number three are understanding then the blessings that the other two sons get, that of Shem and Yefes. And we pointed out that the blessings are really interesting. If you have your text in front of you in verse 26, when Noah blesses Shem, he says, "Blessed is Hashem, God of Shem, and let Canaan be a servant." So the goal seemingly is to bless Shem, and who gets blessed? And then in the next verse in 27, when he wants to bless Yefes, what does he say? May God extend Yefes, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem. The purpose is Yefes, but who gets the blessing? It seems like almost Shem. It's in his tents that the blessings will be eventually fulfilled. And we have to, of course, understand what does it mean to extend Yefes. We raise the question as to the he shall dwell in the tents of Shem can mean either may God extend Yefes, and he, God, shall dwell in the tents of shame, or he, lowercase, Yefes, will dwell in the tents of shame. So, just again, this is briefly mentioning the questions that we raised. That's the third topic of the blessings. I did add one thing on our outline which we did not discuss last week, and I'll just mention briefly now, just in terms of setting up our topics, and that is the blessings. Rashi quotes that when Shem and Yefes took this garment and covered their father Noach, they merited two things as a result of this. Shem, the older brother who initiated this idea, because he covered his father with his garment, merited the fringes of the tzitzis for his children. We, of course, Avraham, and then the Jewish people are descendants of Shem, and we merited the blessing of being able to fulfill the mitzvah of tzitzis through the action of Shem, who covered his father with his garment. And we noted last week that it was Shem who had the original idea to do so, and therefore he gets the garments of tzitzis. Yefes, who went along with the idea, Rashi says, merited kvura, the concept of burial. Now, everybody has burial, so we have to, what does it mean that Yefes specifically, not Shem, Yefes, the son, which is not us, we're not Yefes, we are children of Shem, but Yefes merited burial. So I'm going to add this to the question, just as a question to the understanding of the blessings. There are two distinct roles here. Number one, we have the actual verbal blessings that Noach bestows upon his children. To Shem, he says, blessed is Hashem, the God of Shem. To Yefes, he says, may God extend you, but may he dwell in the tents of Shem. And then, aside from the actual verbal blessings, which we'll have to understand what in the world they mean, we then have this aspect of, there's a side discussion of, because of the act they did of covering their father's nakedness with his garment, Shem is given tzitzis, and Yefes is given burial, and how does this all fit into our whole story? Is that enough questions for everyone? Just to sort of make sure that this is as clear as mud.
What does it mean, given burial?
I asked that question first. In other words, the Rashi quotes, the son merited. In other words, tzitzis is easier because there wasn't tzitzis before, and now there is a concept of tzitzis. So he merited the mitzvah of tzitzis because he covered his father. And we see the connection, the garment, tzitzis go on a garment. I'm seconding your questioning. What does it mean that Yefes, because he joined along with his older brother, Shem, in covering their father's nakedness, somehow merited burial?
Burial of him, of himself?
In other words, there's a concept of burial, which, as Lucy pointed out, like, what does that mean, he merited burial? Okay. I mean, a little bit we can understand the concept of burial is covering the physical body with earth, very similar to Noach being exposed naked, being covered with a garment, so the same way the body is put back into the earth as it was born, unclothed and naked, and the earth covers it. So burial is that same concept. So it's not like this is out of left field, but it's still a little bit out of left field. And we have to understand what exactly that means. It was specifically given to Yefes. So those would be the three topics we need to approach. Why is Noah planting the vineyard, and why is he getting drunk? What's the deal with Canaan, and what role does he play here? And then understanding the ramifications of this story, and how the ramifications fit what actually took place in the story. So far, so good? Okay, so we'll come back next week and we'll
John. So are you going to answer?
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. You want answers? I'm really good at asking questions. Answers is a whole different story. Okay, so let's get started. So I think the best place to start, of course, is the middle.
Yeah, okay.
So let's start with topic number two, the role of Canaan. I think this will help. We'll discuss the role of Canaan, and I think then that we'll get back to a little bit as to the bigger picture of Noach and what was Noach's role and agenda in all of this. We'll go back to topic number one. Of course, all these three topics are just subjectively done by me. The Torah doesn't describe them as three different topics. I'm just breaking it down that way to help us try to tackle them one at a time. And we will get back, of course, to Noach. Well, let's start with Ham. We raised an issue. I want to talk about this part briefly because I don't want to get too bogged down with technical aspects as to what's the order of the children of Noach. Now, the Torah lists them at least three times. I think it's actually more, as these are the sons of Noach. And every single time the Torah lists the sons of Noach, what is the order that the sons of Noach are listed in? Excellent, right? It's just, it's so common to us because we hear it all the time. Shlosha b'nei Noach, Shem, Cham, Yafes. Now, if we took that listing of the Torah, who would be the oldest?
Shem.
And who would be the youngest?
Yafes.
Now, there are two reasons why this can't be. One would seem to be the verse that we have in our story, which was in verse 24, Chaf Dalet. Vayiketz Noach, and Noach awoke from his wine, vayedas asher asolo b'no ha-katan. And he realized what his small son had done. Now, of course, we're going to say whether or not this means literally small in age, does it mean small in stature, but let's just put all of our clues together. Who are we referring to when we refer to the b'no ha-katan?
The youngest.
Which son, Noemi? Which son are we referring to?
Yafes. I think we're referring to
Cham. Cham. In other words, Yafes is out of context. I mean, in the context of the story, which son had done something to Noach that Noach would say, I now realize what my son has done? That's Cham in our story. Cham is the one who saw his father's nakedness and tells his other brothers, and then Noach wakes up and says he realized what his son... So Cham is being described as the B'no HaKatan. Now, we raise that as a question. We'll get back to that. Let's, if you have your chumashes out, we're going to do a little bit of exploration today. We're going to go around. Let's take a look at verse 10, pasuk 21.
What page, please?
I will give you the page in a second as soon as I get there. 10:21 is on page 46. The Torah, if you look in the bottom chart on page 47, you'll see is that we're in the middle of going through the 70 nations. We are going to take a look at all of the various sons. Now let's actually look at that box in verse 40 on page 47 on the bottom there. So you see the 70 nations, and you see how the Torah is listing it as they've given us an art scroll here, a great little description, how they all stem from the three sons. So look across the top there, you see Yafes on the left, and Cham in the middle, and Shem on the right. Those are the three sons, and they each have several sons and grandsons, and for a total of 70. How many children does Shem have?
Five.
He has five. What about Cham?
Four.
And Yafes?
Seven.
Great. Now, if we're looking at Cham for a second, how is Cham described in our story? Every time we mention Cham, what do we call him?
The father.
Excellent. The father of Canaan. What do you have to say about that when you look at this little chart?
Why not the father of Cush?
Excellent. Who is the oldest son of Cham?
It was Canaan.
It would look like it's Cush. It would look like then Mitzrayim, then Put, then Canaan. Do you want to know where this comes from? This comes from verse 10, right on our page, chapter 10, verse 6. On the top of your page, on 46, the very top line on your page, on page 46, the sons of Cham were? Mitzrayim, Put, and Canaan. Did art school do a good job on the chart down below?
Yes.
They sure did. It's accurate, right? The Torah describes four sons of Cham, Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, Canaan, and the Torah lists them, 15, 16, 17, 18. So far, so good, everybody with me? Which makes it odd that in our story, Cham is described over and over again as the father of
Canaan.
Definitely seems a little bit strange, right? So far, so good. I'm continuing. I know you're looking for answers, and I'm really just raising more questions, but that's the way it goes. So far, so good, though?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's look at another interesting verse. Let's look at verse 21 when we get to the progeny of Yafes, who had, as we know, Shem, the children of Shem, who had five sons. Ulashem yulod gamhu avi kol b'nei Aver, all the children of Aver, achi Yafes hagadol. Torah throws in little hints along the way. 21, and to Shem, I'm reading it in English now, also to him were born, he was the ancestor of all those who lived on the other side. So Shem is going to be on the other side, Aver, which is where Avram, of course, is going to be Aver Hayad on the other side. The brother of Yafes, the elder. The brother of Yafes the elder. What does that imply? Who's the oldest here?
Yafes. I think it would imply.
Sounds like Yafes is. Now again, just to make sure that we're all getting equally confused. What's the list the Torah gives us of the three sons every time it lists them? Shem, then Cham, then Yafes. You want to just like write that on one of your pieces of paper on the top, just to like keep it in order,
yeah.
Right? So the Torah would seem to imply that Shem is the oldest, and then we have Yafes, and Shem Cham, excuse me, then Yafes. The Torah actually, when it describes the children of Shem, in a very odd place, sneaks in. Oh, and by the way, Shem is the younger brother of Yafes, who is the eldest.
Yafes is the eldest.
That's now,
what it says here.
That's what it sounds like, right? Now, Rashi goes about to prove that this is, in fact, correct, that the way to read it is that Yafes is the eldest. And he says, and how do I know that Yafes is the eldest? Well, if you take a look at Pasuk, chapter, 11, verse 10, just flip two pages. Flip two pages to top of page 50. On the top verse on page 50, we go through the list of the descendants of Shem. The Torah goes through all the lists of all the descendants. Eleh toldos Shem. These are the descendants of Shem. Shem ben Me'as Shana. Shem was 100 years old. Vayolad es Arpachshad Shnosayim Acher Hamabul. When he gave birth to his oldest Arpachshad, 2 years after the flood. Now, we'll do a little bit of sleuthing here. How old is Shem at the time of the flood?
98.
If he's giving birth 2 years after the flood and he's 100.
98.
All right, all my math students are all here so far, so good. 2 years after the flood, he's 100. And Shem is 98 at the time of the flood. How old was Noah's oldest child at the time of the flood? These are great little trivia pursuit questions, right? Ready? So if you... I mean, you want to see this? Is this confusing to go inside, or should I just tell you all the facts?
Tell them the facts.
Tell them the facts? So Noah began to have children when he was 500 years old, the Torah tells us, and the flood happened when Noah was 600 years old. So he begins having children at 500, the flood happens at 600. How old is his oldest child when he hits the flood?
100.
How old is Shem at the time of the flood?
98.
Shem is clearly not the oldest child, that's for sure. Because we know that Shem is only 98 at the time of the flood, and there is a child out there who is 100. Now, there are two possibilities. Yefes is now going to be defined as the oldest. So if Yefes is the oldest and Shem is 90, is 2 years behind him, it can either be Yefes, Shem, and then Cham was even younger, or it could be that they were stacked 1 year apart and it was Yefes, Cham, and then Shem. Those are your two possibilities. But what we know for sure is that Yefes is the oldest and Shem is then younger than that.
So why is there all this confusion?
Why is there all this confusion?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a question I can't answer. I'm not even going to try. Yeah.
I don't see a daughter listed in any of the children.
They don't mention the daughters.
They don't count the daughters. Well, I mean, it is mentioned, like Dina is mentioned as a daughter, so it's not like they're all left out. I just happened to notice that there was
I don't know. It seems that the Torah describes the three sons and their wives were taken on the Teva. It does not seem either there were no daughters or that none of them were taken onto the Teva. I'm assuming there were none.
I mean, going to leave his daughters.
Yeah, I mean, that went. Or there were daughters and they had all married, and then through their marriage they had already become, they went to the other side and they didn't marry to be saved. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. From the text, maybe the Midrashim talk about it, from the text itself, all we see were three sons, they married, they all ended up on the Teva. I don't know if there were daughters who married and became wicked. I don't know if there weren't any daughters. I don't know.
So we mentioned in a class once before, I remember, because it's the number 70, and there are supposedly 70 names of five different Kaddish Baruch
Hu. Okay.
There may be some tie-in or something. I don't know that we actually got to
possibly,
it.
Possibly, yes.
We had a question mark with that.
Possibly. Deeper than usually where I'm able to go. I don't know. Very possible. Okay, but let's put it like this. Right? So I'm trying not to confuse the matter, but the reason why I'm doing this is because we're going to see a dispute between Rashi and the Ramban exactly how to read these verses. What we now have is Yefes is for sure the eldest. Younger than him is Shem. How did the Torah describe Ham in our story? What word did the Torah use to describe Ham in our story in verse 26? Excuse me, 24.
Little
or small. So if we were to take the simplest reading of the Chumash, how would we present the listings of the sons? In what order were they born?
Yefesh.
Chum, right? And therefore, exactly, Yefesh is defined as Hagadol in one place. Chum is defined as Hakatan in another place. That would leave Shem right in the middle. Everything is fine. And then a simple reading of our story, when our story says, and Noach awoke from his wine and realized what his youngest or little son had done, we're simply defining Ham as the youngest and smallest of the children. That will be our simplest reading. Why would Shem, if he's the middle son, be listed first always whenever the Torah lists the orders of the sons? So Rashi comments, Rashi says this back, let me get all my places right. Rashi says in chapter 5, verse 32, one of the many places where they are listed, I believe this is actually the first. Is it back in Parshas Bereishis? Yeah. I'm on page 26, right before the chapter 6. This is the last verse in chapter 5. When Noach was... I'm here flipping around a lot, I apologize. Page 27, verse 32. When Noah was 500 years old, Noah begot Shem, Ham, and Yafet. This is the first time that they are listed, as he began having children when he was 500 years old. Rashi says right away, wait a minute. Now, even though we're in Bereishis in this verse, Rashi already knows all the other verses, and he knows Shem is not the eldest. And how does he know that Shem is not the eldest? Because it says Yefesh is the eldest. He was the biggest one. So Rashi says, well, then why is Shem listed first? Says Rashi, pretty obvious question, right?
Yeah.
Says Rashi, I'm on the right-hand column if you want to follow me. V'halo Yefesh ha-godolhu, 8 lines up from the bottom of the first column. But Yefesh was the eldest. Ela b'tchila ta-doresh eshehu tzadik. And Shem was the most righteous of the three sons, and since he was the most righteous of the three sons, he's listed first. He was born already circumcised, and Avraham was destined to descend from him. So Shem is listed first, then Ham, then Yefesh. So Shem goes first. Okay, let's get back to our story. Now we have all this confusing background, but we'll see that Rashi and the Ramban are going to argue about it, so it's a little bit relevant. Not a little bit, it's relevant. And that's why I took the time to at least go through this. Okay, the Ramban is going to be our simplest approach to the story. I'm going to start with the Ramban, because the Ramban is going to read it exactly as we just did. Now, he's going to be simple in one way and complex in another, and that's why I wanted to set up the two issues that we have. Is Ham the youngest child? Is he the Beno HaKatan? Now the other issue was Ham, who is, we have to figure out which child he is. We also called him over and over again the father of Canaan. And we pointed out that that's a little bit odd because he's actually the father of four sons and Canaan is the fourth of his four sons. Which means we're going to have to address, is Canaan really the fourth son? Which would seem to be the simple reading of the text. But if we keep defining Ham as the father of Canaan, it at least gives us reason to assume there's something else going on over here. Says the Ramban as follows. Now, again, answering the question, as we have in our topic number 2, why is Ham introduced as the father of Canaan, and what did Canaan do that he should be the one to absorb the curse of Noach after this incident? The Ramban writes as follows. Now this Ramban is going to serve as the simplest reading of the text. What we're going to do, what I'd like to do really, when we're done, is understand this text on various levels. On the simplest textual reading, and then we're going to start peeling away levels as to what the sages saw in it to really uncover the inner meaning of the text. So let me set up, which we did already, I just want to review before we read the Ramban, one other textual problem which the Ramban will address on a textual level, but we'll put it out there as far as we address it on other levels. And that was, again, this verse 24, which we've mentioned several times today. And Noach awoke from his wine and realized what his small son had done to him. What was odd about that verse? On a simple reading of the text, what has taken place so far in the story? Just go over.
You know that it was anybody.
Excellent. What do you mean he realized what was done to him? The simple reading of the text would result in the following story. Noach is drunk in his tent. Ham, the son, stumbles in and sees him. goes out and tells his brothers. His brothers go in and cover him. Noach wakes up. What does he find? He's covered. He remembers, gosh, I remember getting drunk. At some point, I got undressed. And now I'm covered. Should he feel loved or unloved?
Loved.
He should feel loved and protected. He woke up drunk in his tent, and he's covered with a blanket. And what does the Torah say he realized?
What his little son did to him.
And that's it. Clearly in the Torah, this is a negative realization, because what are the next words out of Noach's mouth? Cursed be Canaan, a slave of slaves to his brothers. So there's a very problematic textual issue here, that the text would seem to imply nothing but being taken care of, Noach waking up covered in a blanket, and instead it says he realizes what his son had done and curses Canaan. So we said, what happened? There's something missing in the text over here. And B, why is he cursing Canaan and not Ham, the father, who actually, meaning the father of Canaan, the son of Noach, who actually seems to be the perpetrator? So far so good?
How does he know that it was a small son?
Excellent. In other words, we don't know anything. All those are the questions.
Right.
Noach wakes up and he's covered. And instead of feeling loved and protected, he realizes what his small son had done. How did he know it was his small son? How did he know that anything was done? And then he curses Canaan, who's the son of that son.
That disturbs me, actually.
Right? And very difficult.
He knew something about that son, maybe, but he was in a very vulnerable stage, and he realized that also.
Why didn't he feel loved and protected? Why didn't he feel that that the first person who came in saw him and covered him? How did he know that he wasn't covered by the first person who walked in and he covered him? How did he know?
He may not have been completely
out.
Yeah. He could have been.
All right, possible.
He was in a certain state.
Fine. All I want to point out is, when we're going to see the sages, Chazal and the Medrash are going to see layers in this story, this is the problem. They see the text describing Noach waking up and knowing, realizing that his small son had done something. And the text itself doesn't lend itself to that.
Could Noah have been felt guilty because he was drunk?
It's all possible, but then that shouldn't result in Canaan being cursed. Now again, feeling guilty, that's the question from section 1 of why did Noah get drunk? I'm throwing out there as a possibility that Noah did this on purpose and felt it was the appropriate or correct thing to do. So you're his feeling guilty, which might be, but then that would be already addressing that issue, which we're not ready to tackle yet, as to why is he getting drunk anyway? Was this an accident, or did he do this on purpose? But let's just stay focused on, there's a problem as to the fact that Noach wakes up and realizes what his son had done, when the Torah itself does not give us any reason that he should have thought anything happened. So the sages are going to see something happen. The Torah is hinting that there's much more than meets the eye in this story. But let's start with the Ramban, because the Ramban is going to give us the simplest approach to the story, textually based, without getting into the words of the sages and the various levels. But he is going to address this problem, but he's going to address it in a pshat way. And I don't mean to simplify the Ramban, just that he's addressing it on the level of pshat. Says the Ramban as follows. I apologize, I should have photocopied a translation of his words, and you can follow it along inside as opposed to taking my word for it, but my fault, I'm sorry.
Take your word for it.
Yeah, you have to take my word for it.
We believe you.
Yeah, I have to take my word for it. Says the Ramban, Cham hu hakotan lenoach kasher pirashti. Says the Ramban, I hold that Cham was the youngest child. Now, in saying so, he's actually interpreting something which we've been addressing. We know that Yefes is the oldest, and we know that Shem is at least younger than that. That we know. And then we have the Torah describing Cham b'no ha-katan, the little one. Does that mean literally a simple reading that Cham is the youngest child, or does that mean that in stature he's the least? Ramban says, I read it literally. A very simple reading of the text: Cham is the youngest child. U'kenan hu ha-ben ha-gadol l'cham. Kenan is the oldest son of Cham. Now, right away, all of you should say, well, that's weird. Why? Because Art Scroll argues on the Ramban. Art Scroll said that he's the fourth son, that he had Cush and Mitzrayim and Put and then Canaan. And Art Scroll was pretty well sourced because the verse on that same page on the Hebrew side seemed to have listed them that way.
Art Scroll follows Rashi.
Excellent. Art Scroll does follow Rashi. I have a student who pays attention very much the way that I describe. I'm very happy to hear that. Thank you. Now, but the Ramban is going to have to deal with the text. The text seems pretty clear that Canaan is not the eldest son of Ham. Now, what is the Ramban addressing when he says that? Because our story regularly refers to Ham as the father of Canaan. Says the Ramban, that's because he was the father of Canaan and only the father of Canaan. The Ramban knows as soon as he says that everybody's going to jump up and start screaming, what are you talking about, Ramban? Everybody knows he had four sons. Says Ramban, and that which the Torah lists Canaan last, you tell me, what would be a good reason? How could you justify the Ramban? Knowing our story, why should Canaan be listed last? What happens to Canaan in our story?
Becomes a slave.
He's cursed as a slave to his brothers. Says the Ramban, that's why two chapters later, in chapter 11, when we list the sons of Ham, we shtup Canaan at the end. Not because he's the youngest, he's actually the oldest. And how do I know that he's the oldest? Because Ham is always called father of Canaan. So you see he's the oldest. Well, then why is he listed last? Because he's cursed. And since he's cursed as a slave to slaves, so he's downgraded. So we list him last. Now, again, not everyone's going to go with this approach. We have a problem. Ham is called the father of Canaan. Canaan is the fourth son listed. This is the Ramban's shot, how he's going to address it. Now, let's continue with that. After this incident took place with Ham did not have any other children other than Canaan. Canaan is the only child that Ham has, which is why, as I've been describing, he's always defined as the father of Canaan. And therefore, he cursed his children. Why does Noach curse Canaan, the child of Ham? Because, what are Noah's story? Let's go through the story again in a textual level. Ham does something to Noach, leaving aside exactly what he did. Ham embarrasses him. He goes outside and he tells his brother after seeing his father is unclothed. If Noach were to curse Ham himself, but not his progeny, and Canaan is already born, well then Canaan himself avoids the curse. Because Canaan's already born, so he's not going to be caught up in a curse that goes to Ham, his father, and maybe Ham will never have any more children, which means that the whole curse of Noach to his son Ham would last for the duration of Ham's lifetime, and with Ham's death dies the curse, and Canaan, the son who's already born, is totally fine. So says the Ramban, Noach said, you've done something that requires not just a one-time kind of thing, and therefore he ignores Ham himself and says, I'm going to curse your oldest and right now only son, Canaan. V'alakein kolol habein shehayalo. Therefore he curses the son that he has. V'imyolin meya. And even if Ham were then to have 100 other children, die, it's enough, sheyakulol b'no habachor v'chol zaro ito. It was a sufficient curse to curse the eldest and all of the eldest's children and leave everybody else out. So that in the Ramban's approach, Ham is the one given the... I'm hoping I'm not being too repetitive. I want to keep it clear because we're going to see different approaches. Ham Avi Canaan. The reason why he's defined as the father of Canaan is because that was his only child at the time. Why does Canaan get cursed? He didn't do anything wrong. When you read the story, Canaan is a non-player. Now, textually speaking, would we agree with that or not agree with that?
Yeah.
That's the simple reading of the text. What did Canaan do?
Nothing.
Why is he getting cursed? Says the Ramban, because Ham needed it, and there was no other way to get Ham in a way that would be meaningful without getting his son. and therefore Cham, you're out, because your eldest son, he's going to be forever cursed. Your eldest son, who will carry your name, is now cursed, he and his children. You might have a bunch of other children, Cham, and they'll be fine, but your eldest is cursed. So Canaan gets cursed because Cham is Avi Canaan. He takes it. He didn't do anything wrong in our story. And listed later in the Torah, when we list the four sons of Cham, Canaan is put last. Not because he's the youngest, he's actually the eldest, but because he suffers the curse, slavery, he's put at the bottom. But Cham does in fact have three other children, and that is how the Ramban addresses that. Who is the villain of the story? Cham. Who absorbs the curse of the story? Cham's son, Canaan.
There's got to be some kind of, what do they call it, legally quid pro quo. There must be something in the progeny,
mm-hmm.
something that calls for this curse, that because no grandfather
wants to
curse his grandchildren.
Unless they somehow took the traits of their father on some level.
Something.
Okay, we'll get to that. We're going to see, in other words, even when we deal with this on a pshat level, we're going to see all the midrashim are going to tie Canaan and not say, Canaan's not going to be entirely innocent by the end of the story. All right, we're a layer at a time. Layer at a time.
A mystery.
Yeah, 100%. Filling away a layer. Now, what the Ramban has to address is this major question that I started a few moments ago with, of when Noach wakes up and it says he realizes what Cham did to him. What do you mean he realized? What did Cham do to him? How did he realize what Cham did to him? Says the Ramban, pshat level, what did Cham do? What was his sin? He saw the nakedness of his father and did not treat his father appropriately with kavod in covering him, which would have been what he should have done. And instead, he goes out and tells his brothers, and he tells them bifnei rabim. He tells them publicly, as we noted, the verse said in 22, that Cham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his brothers outside. Torah stressed that where did Cham tell them? Outside, in a public way. And therefore, v'yedos asher asalo. So what does it mean when Noach awoke from his wine and realized what had happened? Shegila cherpasol l'rabin. Because everybody's talking. Everybody knows. But who bosh badamer. He was embarrassed.
There weren't too many people around.
There were enough people around. So the progeny, they continued. So in other words, what did it mean that he woke up and realized what had happened? Not that he immediately woke up and was able to perceive that something had taken place. It's that he woke up and he saw his blanket and he actually felt good. Except then he got dressed and he went out. And you know that feeling when you're walking out of the marketplace and you sort of think like everybody's looking at you? He experienced that. And it got back to him that everybody knew that Cham had been in there first and had seen him in his nakedness and had gone out and publicly made fun of him and spread the word, and that his younger and his brothers had covered him, and then he realized what his brother had done. So whereas, again, the simple meaning would be like he woke up and immediately realized that something was wrong, Ramban says, how would he know that? So what it means is, when he woke up and he went out and about, he was able to perceive that everybody knew what was going on. And because of, therefore, what Cham did, his son gets punished. Okay, so on a first level, first shot go-around, story would happen. We haven't addressed topic number one as to why is Noach drunk in the first place. But Noach is drunk. Cham walks in, sees him. Cham does something wrong in going out and telling his brothers publicly. Brothers come in and cover him. Noach wakes up and realizes. How does he realize? Because when he starts walking around, he can perceive that everybody is aware that something has gone on. He's aware that his son Cham did not treat him appropriately, and he curses Canaan. Why does he curse Canaan? Because Cham is Avi Canaan. Canaan is the only existing son at the time of Cham. And he doesn't want to curse the father because the father's already had children, which means that the curse is going to miss eternity. The curse is only going to go on Cham. So instead of cursing the father, he curses the father through his eldest son.
Sins of the father.
Correct, which is an issue. In other words, because of the sins of the father, the son gets it. According to the Ramban, Canaan did nothing wrong. He was an innocent bystander in this story, yet he absorbs the curse because Ham needs to be cursed, and this is the only way to curse him. Ham eventually has three more children, and the reason why they're listed, Cush, Put, Mitzrayim, and then Canaan, is because since Canaan absorbed the curse, he got put last, but he's really not the fourth son at all, he's really the eldest son. The reason why I stress this is because the sages are not going to learn this way at all. This is a pshat. The sages are going to see Canaan is actually the fourth son, which means we're going to have to reinterpret the whole story, because if Canaan is really the fourth son, as the Torah seems to imply, then why is Ham always introduced as the father of Canaan, and why should Canaan get the curse? In other words, what I want to stress is that you need to deal with one of the two things. If you deal with the Torah on the simple level that Canaan is the fourth son, then you're going to have to address, well, why is he the one getting the curse? He must have done something wrong, it would seem, that he should be the one to absorb the curse. Like, why him? If Canaan is the only son, then at least it's easier to understand why he should absorb. There is no one else. If you're going to curse the father through his progeny, this is the only son he's got, then you got to deal with why is he listed fourth, and you could say, oh, because he was cursed, he was listed fourth. But that's how the Ramban addresses it. Canaan is son number one, the eldest son. He did nothing wrong himself, but he absorbs the curse. He absorbs the curse. How did Noach know what had happened? Because when he went out to the marketplace, he could hear people are talking. So he got it. He was embarrassed. Because of his embarrassment, he curses Canaan, representing his father, Ham. So far, so good?
If he had cursed Ham, wouldn't that have still passed through the generation?
So not once he's already born. In other words, similar to a woman who converts and she has children already. So she converted, that's great, but her children, if they've already been born, they're distinct units already at that point. So whatever the mother does won't impact on the children. If the woman converts before she has children, then all of her children are born Jewish. So in the same, so just as a parent, so the curse would be this: if I curse Ham, it would go down to the children that he would have subsequently.
It would have gone down to Canaan also. But
Canaan was already born. Kind of was alive at the time. So if I, if a person today was children,
it has to go to generations that have not been born yet.
No, so that's Ramban's approach is Noach didn't want it to go to Canaan alone, to Ham alone, because Ham might die tomorrow and that's the end of it. Nothing happened. He wanted to have some type of lasting impact. So there's no way, since I don't know if he's going to have any more children. So the only way to make it with a lasting impact is to curse the one child that he has now, that will then go to his children that he would have. And it turns out that Ham ended up having three more children. It ended up being that. So, but Noach didn't know that at the time that he would end up having three more children. So he cursed the only child that existed at the time. Yeah.
Without going into detail, do we know, because in Eos two expressions are the same, that he's cursed and he didn't do anything wrong. Do we know if there's any connection between the two?
And Eov is already a whole different story of God challenging or testing. This is clearly Noach responding to an event by cursing him. The whole book of Eov is about that challenge of tests and whatever, difficulties, trials. This is clearly a response. Somebody did something and Noach responds with a curse. You have to find an action to attribute that to him. Okay, let's begin peeling away the other layers. Rashi's going to start. Rashi's going to go with a more midrashic approach as he works through this entire story. Let's go through a little bit of that as well. So let us start with Chaf Beis 22. The verse had said, Cham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brothers outside. Right? Familiar with that passage, right? Cham saw. And we pointed out that this is the second time now that Ham is being introduced as the father of Canaan. So Rashi's bothered, why are we calling Ham the father of Canaan? Now, a simple meaning reading of the text would result, which son of Ham is Canaan? 1, 2, 3, or 4?
1.
What's that?
1.
Simple reading of the text from the later verses, when we actually list all the children of Ham.
Yeah,
4, right? So Rashi's aware of that later on in the Chumash we're going to list all the children of Ham, and we're going to list Canaan as child number 4. So Rashi is very bothered here, two chapters earlier, where we keep defining Ham as the father of Canaan. Why him? He's the fourth son. says Rashi, Yesh mir aboseinu amrim, there are those from the sages who said, Kenan ra'a v'higid la'aviv, that it was Kenan who actually saw and found Noach first, and went and told his father. Therefore, he's always referenced here, and that's why he got the curse. So Chazal, beginning to peel away layers, say, why is he the father of Canaan? The father of Canaan, what's Canaan's role here? Oh, Canaan is actually the one who stumbled in. Even though the verse says, and Ham saw and told his brothers. Yes, it was Ham who saw and told his brother, but how did Ham know to go into the tent to look? Because Canaan, the grandson of Noach, he saw and originally found Noach, and he went and he told his father, Ham. Now, we're going to deal with several approaches in the words of the sages, and on each one we'll try to understand where they're coming from. What would be the question we would ask on this particular thread that Rashi quotes? That, again, where's Rashi coming from? Because we keep calling Ham the father of Canaan. Why do we call him the father of Canaan? Because it was Canaan, the grandson, who actually saw and went and told his father. What question would we ask on this? Question we'd want to understand better. If you were Canaan, you're the grandson of Noach. Noach the tzaddik. Tamim hoya v'dorosov, perfect in his generations. The man who built a Tevon ark for 120 years, the sole survivor of mankind, and you saw him naked in his tent, what should you do?
Cover him.
Thank you. Cover him. What does Canaan do?
Gossip.
So we would just rephrase the question, that if it's true, if the sages see the fact that Ham is always defined as the father of Canaan, it's because Canaan had a role, and the role would be he was the first one in who stumbled, and he told his father Ham, and then Ham goes and tells his brothers. So we see that Ham is the kind of character. I mean, Ham, it doesn't seem that Canaan went to tell him to say, come dad, help me, we need to cover up Zaidi. Because that's certainly not Ham's reaction. So we would then have to rephrase the question and say, what's Canaan's agenda when he sees his grandfather, Zaidi, the tzaddik, Noach, naked and drunk in his tent, that his first reaction is to go tell his father, Ham? Why did he do that?
Do we know how old he is?
How old is Canaan?
We don't. It's a good question. We don't. Because all we know... Well, we can figure out a little bit. We know that Noah was 600 when the flood hit. We know that he lives 350 years after the flood. Can we figure out, I don't know if we ever figure out exactly how much it is.
So within a decade, I mean, is he, are we talking about a toddler, or are we talking about a teenager?
We're talking about somebody who, for sure, in the eyes of the sages, was a bar dah, somebody capable of mental, and was responsible for his actions. I don't know whether or not...
Over 13.
You know, in our world, well, in other words, we find in the times of the Chumash, and Rivka gets married when she's 3. I don't know how to deal... all I know is that we're not dealing with a child who... The sages, you know, this would be an insignificant story for us. It is dealing with somebody who is capable of making decisions, and his decision was to go and to tell Ham.
Could have been so startled at what he saw, he wasn't sure what to do. It's the advice of the father.
Possible. You know, all those things are possible. But generally, the sage, when they're looking at this, are dealing with it on a different level. You know, all that is technically possible. But I'm posing it as a question, as Rashi is going to begin peeling away layers, why do we keep calling Ham the father of Canaan? Canaan wasn't entirely innocent here. Canaan, says Rashi, was actually the first one in, according to the sages, who stumbles in and finds his father, and then goes and tells his father. I want to leave you with one more Rashi, which is a kind of Rashi that's probably not, I didn't even check, but I'm doubting it was even quoted in the article because it's such a, what's the word I'm looking for? What was the word? I just saw it in print today and I forgot what it was. But, you know, alarming, shocking kind of Rashi. Says Rashi, based on the Gemara, Vayaris Ervos Aviv, verse 22, and he saw the nakedness of his father. Erva Saviv. Now the word erva is the word that's used in the Chumash often when it describes all of the illicit sexual relations knaf erva is the word, the nakedness is the word that's used as a euphemism for all sorts of things. It literally just means nakedness, but it's a word that's used for all sorts of things. And the sages put together two clues. One, ervos aviv, the nakedness of his father, together with what we mentioned a few moments ago. When Noah wakes up, what does the Torah say? He realized what had been done to him. He said, what do you mean what had been done to him? He woke up and he's covered in a blanket. What do you mean he realized? So the sages saw, not like the Rabban says, oh, he means when he woke up and 3 hours later when he was walking around the shuk in the marketplace, people were talking. That's what the Rabban said. Say the sages, no, the Torah says he woke up and he realized what was done. So the Gemara quotes two opinions. Yesh omrim sarso. Some said that Ham castrated his father. Yesh omrim ravo. And some said that he had relations with him. So that when Noah wakes up, the sensational, that's what I was looking for. For the sensational aspect. So when Noah wakes up and he realized what his son had done. How did he realize? He's covered in a blanket. Oh no, he realized. Now, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that both opinions hold that Ham castrated his father. The only dispute is whether or not he had relations with him first and then castrated him, or just castrated him. So that I leave you with this sensational statement of the sages as we peel away the layers, that there is something much more significant going on than simply not covering his father and being cursed as a slave of slaves for all time. Like you're asking, I don't understand. This is a question on the Ramban's simple reading of the text. So Ham doesn't cover up his father and tells his two brothers. And now for eternity, his children are slaves and slaves and slaves. I don't get it. So the sages say, well, there's more than meets the eye here, because the Torah says he saw the nakedness of his father, which is a word the Torah always uses to refer to more than just nakedness, but to elicit sexual relationships. And it says that Noah woke up and realized what his youngest son had done. How do you know it's his youngest son? Well, how do you know that anything had been done? So the sages said, well, something had been done. Noah realized that he was no longer going to have any children. Somebody had set out to make sure that he would never have any more children. And he realized it was his youngest son.
And but how did he realize that's who it was?
Okay, good. So let's leave with the following questions. A, let's now put it back in context. The first thing Noah does is he's drunk. And the first thing he realizes is, well, now I'm not going to have any more. In other words, he gets drunk. Somebody sees him in his drunkenness, Ham, and takes the opportunity to make sure he will never have any more children. Noah wakes up and realizes he will not be having any more children, and understands it was his youngest son or smallest son, Ham, and curses Canaan. Given that what the sages now saw, what they understood as to have taken place, that this was an issue about not having any more children, why was Noah drunk? Why does Ham not want Noah to have any more children? And why does Canaan, who saw this in the first place, what was his agenda to make sure that Ham would know about it, do what Ham does, and then Canaan gets the curse? Did I leave you with more questions than we started?
Yes.
Okay, good. So far, so good. We will continue Mirtz Hashem next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.